May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I think I want to talk about two aspects of the gospel this morning. The first is very briefly, Jesus and his family were very poor. There was a kind of scale of sacrifices for the firstborn child in the temple. And the lowest level was two turtle doves. Everybody could afford a couple of doves. That was the idea, I suppose. And if you were more wealthy, you would sacrifice a more substantial animal. Of course, this custom was a kind of substitute for the ancient and horrifying practice of human sacrifice, which we see in the story of Isaac being redeemed, and various references to the children going into the fire. Fortunately, that was all gone. The temple substituted for that. But only poor people could just afford two turtle doves. That's all I'm going to say about that. It just occurred to me it's a kind of context in which to see Jesus' entire life. He was always poor. He never had two pennies to rub together, as far as we can tell. But the other thing I want to look at is Anna, the old woman, Anna. She was always in the temple, worshipping night and day. She'd been there, as far as we can see, for, well, I don't know what, she was 85 when this took place, and she'd, well, I suppose 60 years or so, she'd been worshipping in the temple. And old women are a bedrock of the church. She reminded me of a woman called Mrs. Jarman in my first ever parish. Mrs. Jarman had been born in the parish, and when I first came across her, she was well into her 70s, maybe her 80s, I'm not sure. She was quite old anyway. And she used to go round the parish all the time with her bike. She never ever rode the bike. She pushed it everywhere, and it was festooned with bags. So she'd take shopping round to the old folks. She was older than most of them. And she was always out and about, and always in the church. She cleaned the church all the time, whenever there was a service. And at that time, this was the only parish I ever had where I was only the vicar. I had nothing else to do, so I did lots of services. And Mrs. Jarman and her friend, whose name I'm afraid I can't remember, was always there. You could always be sure of the two of them, even for the most obscure day when he had a pretext for a service. She was a good woman, an entirely reliable, amiable woman. Never heard a cross word from her. She never actually preached her faith, but she was living it every moment of the day. And then I thought of Boris Yeltsin. It was got nothing to do with Mrs. Jarman, except that in the 1990s, when Christianity was allowed back into operation in, I think it was Russia by then, not the Soviet Union, he went along to a service. He was a very un-Christian guy, but he went along to a service in the Metropolitan Cathedral in Moscow. And after a while, he turned to the archbishop who was officiating and said scornfully, "This place is full of nothing but old women." The archbishop said, "There's an infinite supply." So that was okay. They were part of the bedrock of the church, if you like. Why is that? Not just old women, women in general, are very important to the church. In the Church of England, I have a kind of rule of thumb, which is, and this is simply in the East Midlands, really, the congregation is in good health if one third of the congregation are men and two thirds are women. Very often, far higher proportion of women than that when you go along. The only occasion I've been when there's all women was in Canada, of all places, when I went to a service near Niagara Falls. And there were a lot of people in church for the 8 o'clock service, but the officiant was a woman, the organist was a woman, the wardens were all women, and all the rest of the congregation were women. I kind of felt interestingly situated there, as the token bloke turning up. And the same thing happens in Italy too. I've noticed a friend of mine has a house in a place called Gragnana in Tuscany, and I went along, as I go along every time, to the mass there. They all know I'm a clergyman, by the way. They think I'm a real weird guy because I've got a wife. Anyway, I turn up to the service in Gragnana on the first occasion. And unlike here, of course, nobody was in church when it came to 10:30. Apart from me. I was sitting there at the back, a solo run, it seems. And then gradually, over the next quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, quite a large number of women came in. There wasn't a bloke among them. I was just sitting there, and they all kept looking at me because I was a clergyman who was married. So. And the village, everyone knows everything in that village. And then the priest came in, accompanied by a group of men aged from 80-something to about 12 or younger even. And it occurred to me these were the previous altar servers of the church, and they all sat around the back of the altar in the sanctuary. So the men were all at the back of the sanctuary, and there were only maybe 15 or so of them. And all the other men were outside in the square having a fag and a brandy and chatting. It's absolutely true. And that was the same every week, because I've been, I suppose, 3 times there, that's all, when I've been visiting my friend. So, something about women and Christianity, and I don't know what it is. Well, I've got a few ideas. One is that Christianity can be, and has been over the years, rather a violent kind of faith. Mrs. Jarman told me that she met Colonel Tallance. Colonel Tallance was a solicitor in Newark-on-Trent, who was also a colonel in the yeomanry. Famously, they still talked about it then in Newark, famously he rode his white horse down the road in 1914 with the other ranks of the yeomanry marching behind him to Nottingham to muster for the First World War. Mrs. Jarman worked for Colonel Tallance's son, but she knew Colonel Tallance. And the church cheered on Colonel Tallance and all the rest at that terrifying moment. The Bishop of London at the time, and I don't know what his name was, I can't remember that, the Bishop of London at the time boasted that every male altar server, in fact all the altar servers were men then of course, every altar server in the Diocese of London had volunteered for the army, because he preached to them they must go and fight the appalling Germans. Vast numbers of them were killed, of course, and they discovered that God wasn't necessarily to be found in the trenches, to say the least. And women, perhaps particularly older women, are not as keen as men are on warfare. So perhaps that's something to do with it. Jesus himself seems to have been a pacifist, of course. He spoke of if someone strikes the cheek, turn the other cheek. When his disciples tried to protect him and Peter drew his sword, he told him to put his sword down. He had no intention, inclination, action which suggests anything other than simply letting the Romans be. And this was at a time when the Jews frequently rebelled against the Romans, and indeed they had a massive uprising in AD 70, after Jesus was dead, of course, and went to war against the Romans. Jesus himself talked of giving Caesar the things that are Caesar's and God the things that are God's. And God was love, not hatred. God was service, not warfare. So I hope that's one reason why women are keener on Christianity in England. I can't say for France or Italy. Well, Italy, yes. Are keener on God and Jesus than the men. And this does pose a few problems now. The role of women is changing. You must have noticed, ladies, massively. They join the army, the air force, the navy. They go into combat now. I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones, but the women there seem to be just as portrayed as just as violent as the men. And I don't suppose that's any coincidence. Social changes are reflected in artistic and dramatic presentations. So things are changing. We have to change how we relate to people. Not only women, but men too, of course, as time goes on. Context changes. Context is everything. God doesn't change at all. We know everything we'll ever know about Jesus, while we're alive at least, because it's all in the Bible. So those are constant. But the context of life changes all the time. Sometimes advantageously for the Christian, sometimes disadvantageously. But we need to sniff the wind and find out how we can keep the constancy of God, the constancy of his love, the constancy of Jesus and his sacrifice and offering to all of us, the constancy of what we get from Jesus. We need to keep that accessible to people in different contexts. And we've got to do something about it. And my old boss, Michael Nazirali, the Bishop of Rochester, had a bit of an obsession. He said that the Church of England was losing the women, which was rather a horrifying prospect. I don't know if we still are, but he certainly, he was a very acute man. We certainly were, as far as he could see. So Anna shows the steadfastness of women's devotion to God. She, incidentally, we noticed that she wasn't quoted in this story. Simeon gets a nice long speech, and she just is kind of noticed that she was around and doing her stuff. That's changed, I'm glad to say, over the last 2,000 years, and long may it continue to change. But in changing, we need to make sure that we don't lose that commitment that has been the bedrock of the church for ages. Amen.